Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's discussion about new GTLD program safeguards against DNS abuse. I'm Nicole Davenport, GDD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few things. This discussion is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published at newgtlds.icann.org/reviews. The purpose of this discussion is to hear from you. There are multiple ways that you can participate. If you're able to, we recommend entering the discussion through the Adobe Connect room. After you've logged into Adobe Connect, you will be prompted to join the audio conference. The meeting can dial you at your preferred phone number, or you can enter in listen-only mode. Joining the audio conference through Adobe Connect will allow you to speak and signal that you have something to say by raising your hand. For those who select the listen-only mode, you can type your discussion points into the Adobe Connect pod in the lower portion of the screen called Comments for Discussion. This is separate from the chat pod. The moderator will read your comments aloud to the group if they're entered into the Comments for Discussion pod. Note that you will only be able to see your own discussion points when using this pod. Those who are joining us via phone only, the moderator will poll the audience periodically asking if you'd like to be added to the comment queue. At that point, please state your name and affiliation, and we will call on you for comment when feasible. The moderator will switch back and forth between each group of participants. For the purposes of this discussion, the chat room has only two functions. Number one, it allows participants to have informal discussions with one another. And two, you can use it to report technical difficulties or ask questions of ICANN staff. Comments made in the chat pod will not be read aloud. For those on the audio bridge, please keep your lines muted when you're not speaking. To mute and unmute your line, dial *6. When the moderator calls on you, please state your name and affiliation before speaking, and make sure that your phone is not on speaker. Remember to abide by ICANN's expected standards of behavior, regardless of what method you're using to participate. The participation information you've just heard has been posted in the Adobe Connect Notes pod for reference. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our moderator, Brian Aitchison, Lead Researcher, GDD Operations and Policy Research.
Thanks, Nicole, and thank you all very much for joining our call. We're very happy to have you here and appreciate the time you're taking to offer your input on this important topic. My name is Brian Aitchison, and I'm the research lead for the DNS Abuse Review, and I'll also serve as moderator for this discussion. I'll have my contact details at the end of the session if you need to get in touch. We also have Karen Lentz, Anna Loop, and Mike Brennan and Moises Cirilio providing support for the call. So first, we have our agenda to go over. I'll go over it a bit and talk a bit more about the purpose and goals of the talk. We're ultimately here to aid the work of the Competition, Consumer Choice, and Consumer Trust Review Team, who's exploring the effectiveness of 9 safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse in the new GTLD program. And that line of work is being carried out in fulfillment of Section 9.3 of ICANN's Affirmation of Commitments. If you look at the suggested reading in the announcement for this discussion, you'll see a paper called Mitigating Malicious Conduct, which discusses the background and rationale behind these 9 safeguards. We're currently drafting a report on the effectiveness of the safeguards and how they're being used, and so we want to get your input on them and your experience with them. So we'll want to explore a few topics. First, we want to discuss a working definition of DNS abuse. Which activities encompass DNS abuse? Some tend to be quite clear-cut, and some fall into a gray area, so this is something we'll want to pin down. Second, we'll want to look at ways of measuring abusive activities in the DNS. Presumably, this would be by activity, so how to measure something like spam, how to measure phishing, how to measure any other activity we deem relevant. But in particular, and to the extent possible, we'd like to examine any proposed measures as potential proxies for measuring the effectiveness of these 9 safeguards that are really the main focus of the discussion. So that's something to keep in mind. Third, we want to discuss specific means of measuring the effectiveness of these 9 safeguards. You'll see that many of them don't necessarily lend themselves to a straightforward quantitative measurement. For example, how do we measure the effectiveness of Thick Who Is as a safeguard? We can measure its accuracy to an extent, but is that an adequate measure of effectiveness? And finally, we'd like to get your impressions on these safeguards as an aspect of your personal or professional experience. Do you see them as effective? Why or why not? Would you recommend we explore any other safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse? And these last two topics, topics 4 and 5, will comprise the bulk of our talk here. So those are the topics we'd like to cover, but before diving in, there's just a few things to note about the call. In addition to providing a kind of brainstorming forum, it's also a qualitative research call. We are gathering data here. We won't quote anyone directly, but your input will feed into the report we're producing and may be referenced in a general way. And also note the call is being recorded. In terms of designing a research project, we're in an exploratory stage right now. Our goal at this point is to keep everything transparent and interactive as possible. There will be a chance for public comment on the report we produce for the CCT review team, and we're aiming to get that out by mid-February. So we encourage everyone to speak. One of the main goals is to bounce ideas off each other as much as possible. But if things do get a bit crowded and you don't feel you can get a word in, please do, as Nicole indicated, use the comments for discussion box. And if you still can't say what you'd like or need to jump off the call for whatever reason, we do have a questionnaire available so you can log your input that way. I know there were some difficulties registering to receive the questionnaire, so if that does remain an issue for you, please get in touch with me using my email on the last slide. Also note that we'll have to adhere quite strictly to our timeline for each topic, so apologies in advance if you do get cut off, but please do use these other input methods if you do. So I think that's all I need to say in terms of introduction, so let's get started. Moving to topic 1, we've allocated 15 minutes to this topic of how to define DNS abuse. Obviously, there's a number of activities that could be included, but the idea here is to discuss what should be inbounds for analysis and what shouldn't. And of course, any linkages between how we define the topic and our safeguards would be welcome in this context. So, which activities do you consider to be DNS abuse? And if you could put forth a globally accepted definition, what would it be? And with that, I'll turn it over to our forum.
Do we have anyone on the line that would like to make a comment on this? Anyone in the Adobe Connect room? Just a reminder, if you have something to say, something to add on this topic, if you can raise your hand. And to do that, in the upper portion of the screen in the Adobe Connect, you'll see a little icon of a person with their hand raised. And if you go ahead and click that, it will raise your hand, and we can take your comment.
Okay, thank you. It looks like we have a comment from Rod Rasmussen. Rod, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So I would point the group to the work of the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, which submitted a final report in May of 2010, where we actually did this work to a certain degree, and had a whole section on the malicious use of domain names, which I would say that quality would be akin to DNS abuse. So there's an extensive amount of material there that covers a wide range of issues that we found both in and out of scope for this question. A lot of background as to what the causes and effects were on those and recommendations around how to deal with it. So it kind of covers the gamut of many of the topics that being covered here tonight, or this morning, wherever you are in the world. There's my comment I wanted to add at this point.
Thank you, Rod. Can you elaborate on some of the specifics of that report? It's something I actually personally just encountered about a week ago doing this research.
Sure. We went through and we took a look at several different things at the time. So this is 2008, 2009 that this was commissioned and looked at several different things that were being considered abuse depending on your perspective. And we went through those and got consensus, unanimous consensus around several different ones, and then not so much consensus on others. So things that were in scope for the working group, I'll just read down the list of things that we the practices we covered, besides kind of malicious use. I'll cover that in a second. There's malicious use, and then there were other uses, including things like cyber squatting, front running, deceptive or offensive domain names, fake renewal notices, name spinning. I don't even remember what that was. That was something that we were doing back then. Traffic diversion, cross TLD registration scams, and domain kiting or domain tasting. A lot of those ICANN veterans will remember from back in the day that have been to a large extent solved problems. Then there were malicious uses of the domain name system, which included things like phishing, large-scale spam, malware, botnet, malware and botnet command and control. I think those were the main ones that we covered at that point in time. There was a unanimous consensus around some of the malicious use. In other words, criminal or malicious actors registering domain names and using the capabilities of the DNS system in order to perpetuate, various scams and crimes online. So that was the work that came out of that working group in that area. Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, Rod, great. Thank you. I actually have some notes from that report, and I think that's a useful distinction coming from the report, was characterizing abuse as registration abuse versus kind of use abuse, with use abuse falling into sort of phishing, spam, malware, botnet, command and control, that kind of thing. And then there's registration abuse, which is cyber squatting and front running and all those activities you mentioned. Of course, ICANN itself has some nominal control over registration abuse just through our contract agreements, but use abuse becomes a bit more problematic, at least from ICANN's perspective. So I think that's a useful distinction to bear in mind as we go forward with this discussion. So thanks for that, Rob. And we have a comment from Yoshiro Yonea. The term DNS abuse is ambiguous for me. This topic seems to include both system security and domain name usage. So hopefully for Yoshiro, some of what Rod and I have mentioned will be useful for you in arriving at clarification. I'll pose the question to the group. Do you have any feedback on that kind of definitional framework? Rod, it looks like you're up again, so I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, and I'd actually raised my hand before you asked that last question. In response to the comment comment that was made, and I agree with that comment, that it's always been a problem within the ICANN sphere. We've had this terminology of DNS abuse that largely is reflected more domain registration / domain usage abuse. So the term is not as imprecise, for sure, because more classical DNS abuse might, classical to coin a phrase, I guess, would probably be more around things like reflective DDoS attacks, right, where you're using DNS infrastructure and protocol against itself to amplify DDoS attacks to great effect, I might add. So that's, and that is an area that has been explored extensively by ESSEC. I have several papers that we've put out on the disclosure. I'm a member of those ESSEC, which is the Security and Stability Advisory Committee for ICANN. We've put out several issue papers on that, as well as many other organizations out there that have been looking at that problem. So that would be another area that I would argue, if you're going to call it DNS abuse, that you would traditionally, or I guess just from the naming, infer would be covered in that. However, that's yet another area well outside of ICANN's purview for a large extent, other than maybe for informational and things like that. I did want to add just two other things that have come to being since 2010 that I would consider DNS abuse in a way, which were not covered in that that paper I mentioned earlier. One of those is related to DDoS attacks in particular, and that is it's a combination of the two between it's setting up infrastructure for commencing DDoS attacks by registering a domain name and adding very large text records to its DNS record, and then using that in a spoofing attack for maximum amplification capability. So you have a combination of kind of a registration type of abuse, and oftentimes those will use names that may be very interesting from many different aspects, because they will look like names of infrastructure and things like that. So that's one form of abuse. Another abuse we're seeing utilizing the DNS and also utilizing the domain registration system is a practice called, it's been in the security field, called domain shadowing. And that is an abuse that is perpetuated by people who have gotten access to domain registration, registrants accounts at registrars, either through malware or phishing or social engineering of some sort. But they've gotten access to those accounts, and they will go in and create, using the convenient control panels and the like, they will create new host names underneath those domains. The registrar typically has to have DNS management capabilities enabled, so it'll be more of your retail kind of registrars, your one-stop shops. And they will set up these various host names and not actually compromise the main domain name. And these various host names will be used for all kinds of things, from distributing malware to phishing to all kinds of other abuse. So you have criminals, getting unauthorized access to the DNS system through these innocent bystanders' accounts, and then setting up various abuse using the fact that they have what now has a very good reputation of a domain, but has these subdomains now under it that are doing, these malicious acts. So that's yet another interesting hybrid combo, I would call it, that is that we're seeing now quite prevalent in attacks these days. So a couple of new things that have been created in the last 4 or 5 years. Thanks.
Thanks, Rod. That's very helpful for us. I remember meeting you in Dublin, and one of the when I told you about myself leading this project on DNS abuse, or I think we were calling it malicious conduct, one of the first things you asked me, well, what do you mean by malicious conduct? And I was quite nonplussed at how to answer. So thanks for that. Does Anyone else have something to add? What Rod has said, or in general responses to the question about which activities we consider to be DNS abuse, and if you could put forth a definition, what that would be. We have just another 2 minutes for this section of the talk.
As a reminder to participants, if you are on the phone and you'd like to speak, you can mute and unmute your line using *6.
Okay, great. I think that's sort of perfect timing. We'll move on to the next question. So slide 5, we've allocated 15 minutes to discussing methods of measuring DNS abuse in general. One of the ideas behind this is we're considering assessing the rate of DNS abuse occurring in new GLDs as a kind of contextual or benchmark measure to frame our analysis of the safeguards. Some of the things we're thinking when adding this question were, are there methods that are commonly used, perhaps perceived as best practice measures of DNS abuse? And what do we as researchers want to look for in these kinds of measures? Are there considerations we should know about regarding accuracy, representativeness, depth, those kinds of things? I don't want to prompt the discussion too much, but any ideas you may have about this would be helpful, so I'll leave it to our participants. What are the most effective methods to measure the prevalence of abusive activities in the DNS?
If you're unable to join the call, you can use the comments for discussion pod at the bottom of the Adobe Connect window and type in your comment, and we'll go ahead and read it aloud to the group.
We have a comment from Yoshiro, and then Rod has his hand raised. We'll get to you after. Yoshiro mentions continuous traffic monitoring, QPS, is the best way for finding anomalies. Okay, thank you, Yoshiro.
So I really don't want to monopolize this conversation, but feel free to call me if nobody else wants to talk. There are many ways of measuring these kinds of things. Obviously, people are measuring things at various locations depending upon their ability to view the Internet. There are also similar organizations that bring those measurements together and try and collate them. So I will give a couple of examples. The DNS itself, DNS OARC, it's dns-oarc.net, for those who are not familiar, it consists of many of the root zone operators, the TLD operators, many large recursive and authoritative DNS providers. They do a lot of measurement of what is going on in the DNS itself. A lot of the companies that run the DNS are also looking for activities, again, DDoS and other abusive activities, and actually have, besides running those systems, offer services in that area. So a company like VeriSign, for example, has both the registry and the root zone, root servers, and they have a security division as well. So they're able to they and other companies like that, Nominet does many of the same things in the UK space, are able to provide a lot of the metrics and unbiased measurement around activities that are going on. That's done in the pure DNS level, which you can see a lot of activities, including things like DDoS or improper access attempts, things like that. Groups like the Anti-Phishing Working Group collate statistics around various kinds of online malicious activity. As you might imagine, with their name, phishing is right at the top, but malware and things like that are also tracked. There are many other organizations that do this. There are many volunteer efforts that do this and bring us all together. A key thing to remember, and I refer back to that report from 2010 on the registration abuse working group, was that you have to differentiate between activities that are really kind of associated with domain names or the DNS itself versus activities that are based on compromised websites and activities going on there, because they're really kind of separate entities. Because, and that's mainly in knowing how to respond to activities. So if you have a maliciously registered domain name, you need to talk to a registrar about suspending that. If you have a compromised domain name, you need to talk to a site owner or hosting company in order to rectify that. So the methodology and how you classify things often defines how you deal with the problem downstream. Thanks.
Thank you, Rod. We have another comment from Yoshiro Yonea. SIDN announced that their DNS traffic analysis system, Entrada, is now open source and provides the web link there. Thank you, Yoshiro. Would anyone like to offer input who's on the phone and not participating via Adobe Connect? While we're waiting for questions to come in, Rod, and for the group, I'll pose this question. In terms of these sort of larger scale measurements or studies that you've seen, would you see these safeguards potentially having some kind of causal effect on the rate of abusive activity in the DNS? Would there be some kind of measurable uptick or downtick as a result of these safeguards? Is that the right sort of question to ask in general about how to approach this subject?
You're talking about the 9 safeguards in particular?
That's correct.
Right. I don't have those in front of me, but I do remember there are some there that are measurable. I think you already mentioned this earlier in the conversation. And some that are going to be very difficult to track, especially over time. Might be very difficult to tie in some of the large-scale measurements. Some of them DNSSEC deployment, though, that was one of the 9 safeguards. That's really easily measured by, DNSSEC, for example, is publishing statistics on that, as are others. So that one is easily captured by some of the measurement capabilities of the that are already in existence today. Others not so much. The quiz is a challenging one, other than, as you mentioned before, accuracy potentially can be measured there. And ICANN has commissioned many studies on that. So, that is measurable to an extent. But the question is, how does that translate into curtailing the types of abuse that you're worried about? So really, I think what you have to be able to do is define, your goals a little bit better around what are the activities that you're looking to curtail, and then you've got some safeguards and then some measurement tools, and how can you line those all up?
Great. Thank you, Rod, for that. Would anyone else like to comment on topic two or respond to Rod's comments? So just feeding off Rod's comments, one of the discussions we've had, sort of theoretical discussions as we've put together this research project, is from a sort of hypothesis-oriented standpoint, you would expect to see a sort of cleaner DNS space, comparatively speaking, post-2010 or post-safeguard introduction, however you want to define it, than you saw before 2010, when we did not have these safeguards. Does anyone have any feelings on that? Would we see a cleaner DNS space as a result of these safeguards as opposed to the pre-new GTLD era?
So this is Rod. I'll make one comment on that, is that we have certainly seen a decline in what I would call bad actors in the domain registration marketplace. They have been not eliminated, but driven into it's much more difficult for somebody with bad intent, so to speak, to become part of the ecosystem that provides domain name services and associated DNS services. Part of that, and go to safeguard number one, which is screening, and I would also follow it up with better enforcement and much more clearly delineated contracts. It's not just the safeguards. So there's putting on the kind of the economist hat, you got to do your regression analysis in order to figure out the causal factor, not the causal factors, not just the correlating factors. And I don't know that you have enough data to be able to do that, but there certainly is a decline in kind of safe harbors for malicious actors to go and obtain DNS resources. Now, just follow that with the second comment. I don't know that there's really been a decrease in malicious activities on the Internet, but it is harder for them to use the DNS, at least as an open shop quite openly and brazenly, put it that way.
Great. Thank you, Rod. So we have a couple more minutes on this topic, but we could move on. But before we do that, would anyone else like to add anything to this part of the discussion? Okay, great. We'll leave the discussion at that then, and we'll move on to our next topic, which is how to measure the effectiveness of our 9 safeguards. One of the main issues we and the CCT review team will be facing is how to measure effectiveness as a concept. And this is a tough area because, as we've sort of alluded to, a lot of these safeguards aren't necessarily amenable to straightforward quantitative measurements. As it stands, effectiveness of a particular safeguard can only be loosely inferred without strict definitions of what we mean by it and how we choose to measure it, which is what Rod just noted. So, due to time constraints, we won't go through each in order, but encourage you to jump in with any suggestions on any of them. But I'll leave it to you. How do we measure the effectiveness of these safeguards? And I know there's a lot of information on that slide, so we'll give you a minute or two to kind of digest it and come up with an answer. Thank you.
Just a reminder to those folks who are on the phone and have joined us in audio mode only, if you'd like to present a comment, just go ahead and unmute your line by pressing star 6 and let us know your name and that you're interested in making a comment, and we'll get you in the queue.
Yeah, this is Rod, and somebody else has jumped in. I'll jump in again. I think the safeguards are fairly easy to measure as far as have they happened or not, for the most part, right? Because you can, I'll just run down it here real quick. The registry operators, you know, you can measure that based on complaints and compliance activity. Pretty straightforward. Compliance has done a good job of setting up measurements and tracking that over time now over the last few years. DNSSEC deployment, easily measured, already being measured by, as I mentioned, DNSORC. Thick WHOIS records, that's, you know, basically are they there or not, and that's easily checkable per registrar or registry. And we know where they are and they aren't. You can track that. Wildcarding, again, easily tested within the DNS. Orphan glue records, that's a little trickier, but you can do that with zone files. And there have been plenty of studies on that. That's just a matter simply of tracking over time. Centralized zone file access, so it would have been created with the RZDAP program or whatever. I think that's the acronym. And participation in that is easily measured just by seeing who's actually in it and who isn't, and how they actually access it. But I believe that was contracted, that they have to participate. The registry and registrar level abuse contacts, easy enough to document where they have them. I would suggest testing to see whether they actually work, and potentially getting some feedback from people, from the community members at large that have tried to use them, and see how effective they are. But actually what's in the contracts is they have to provide them, and they have to provide, I believe, an answer within X period. I don't remember off the top of my head. The ESRP, that's an internal ICANN thing, so it would be difficult to measure externally, I guess. And then the high security zone valid verification is, I believe, only a few zones are doing that, and they're meeting requirements that are being imposed by them by contract. So again, that's auditing. That's all well and good. The question is, does it actually do something to address the rationale for the safeguard in the first place? You need to measure whether the safeguard has been put in place or not, I think, for all of these, relatively easy. Really difficult to determine whether or not they've had the effect they were actually given a rationale for. So that's actually where I think that the hard nut here is. That's probably what you're asking for. I've taken off the easy part there. The hard part is it actually doing something that that was the reason you set it up in the first place? And I think that is much harder to do other than and a few kind of technical cases around, for example, DNSSEC, that deployment of that does actually have an effect on spoofing, for example. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Rod, and I agree. It's very difficult to sort of measure the absence of something, or if we take, for example, the vetting of registry operators, which is to prevent bad actors from running registries. If it acts as a deterrent, those bad actors aren't engaging or pursuing that path, so there's really no way to kind of see what they're doing. And right. So that's all I'll say on that. Would anyone like to respond to Rod's comments or offer any other ways to measure the effectiveness of a particular safeguard or all of them? Hi, this is Brian again. One of our kind of fallback measures, I suppose, is to explore more qualitative options, soliciting feedback from people who've actually used this, given the fact that so many of these are hard to measure on that effectiveness level. Would you see problems with that? I'm trying to ask... what would you like to see in terms of this report? What would it show you in terms of measuring effectiveness? Would you like to see feedback? Would you like to see sort of more statistical type analyses? And any ideas on the kinds of questions we should ask of data itself or of people who've actually used these safeguards? Thank you. All right, so it looks like we're not getting too much feedback on that one. So we'll move on to our next slide. Oh, I'm sorry, I think we may have a hand raised here. One moment. Kimo, hi Kimo, we met in Dublin. Good to have you here. Please go ahead.
Hi Brian, this is Kimo Ogunemi from Interpol. First of all, I agree what Rod earlier said about measuring effectiveness. From law enforcement point, it's always difficult to measure if something or safeguard really works and provides opportunity to prevent bad actors, for example, running registries, or if DQs really provide accurate information. So that's a problem in law enforcement side. We try all the time measure how effective our actions are, and unfortunately we don't have any way to provide a proposal if that could be done in a statistical way. Most probably it's not possible. So what we can do, of course, from user side is, of course, we can provide feedback. We can provide examples how we use these and what were our experience. But I think providing statistical feedback in general would be quite difficult.
Thanks, Kimo. Yes, that's the difficulty we're encountering over on our end too. So that's one of the reasons for this call. But it's good to hear that kind of verified, I suppose, that we're not the only ones having difficulty measuring these kinds of things. So thank you. Would anyone else like to offer any input on this particular topic? If anyone's on the phone, please feel free to identify yourself and provide input. Okay, I think we can move on to topic four. And what we'd like to do is getting your input on any experience you have had with these safeguards from the perspective of your role or organization. How were they effective or not? Why do you think they were or were not effective? This is open discussion time, so we encourage you to jump in on any safeguard. So yes, if you could just comment on your experience, impressions, what worked, what didn't, and I'll leave it to the forum. Thank you. And I'll put the safeguards back up just so you can see.
Hey, Brian, this is Rod, and I'm actually having to leave the Adobe room because I've got to actually drive home. But I'll stay on the line. I'll just give you a couple of thoughts real quick. And I think I already mentioned the vetting registry operators, I think, has definitely had a good effect. And certainly in the launch of the new GTLDs, we're very concerned about bad actors getting in through that process just because of the scale of things. And I think, knock on wood, that has come off very well. Prohibitions against wildcarding definitely have worked in the GTLD space. Unfortunately, the CCTLD space has different rules depending on the country you're in, so it hasn't solved that issue. And it rears itself in many ways. And I won't go into the details here, but it's certainly it's forced it into the CCTLD space. I don't believe the orphan groom record problem has been completely solved because there's some technical issues around that. And so that continues to be, I think, at least at a low level, a bit of an issue, but that's certainly not the problems we had so we'd seen, 10 years ago or more. DNSSEC deployment has, that's been universal. It's created an environment where it's possible to use DNSSEC for security, and some large ISPs have taken advantage of that. That is still, the deployment is still going very slowly, but it is on an upward tack. So requiring that was certainly helpful in jump-starting that needed technological move forward. So I think that's been positive. And having registrar and registry level abuse contacts has definitely been helpful. And I know the compliance team has been following up on that, and that has certainly made it so it's not completely impossible to reach some of these registrars in a country that is not your own, I'll put it that way. Certainly not following best practices. That has been very helpful in at least establishing a communications channel when you deal with abuse issues like we do every day. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Rod. Another question I'd like to add to the one about our experience with these safeguards is, are there any kind of safeguards that you would recommend us exploring? Thank you.
Hmm.
just to clarify, in safeguards that were not included on this list, safeguards, not one of these nine safeguards. Thank you.
Just a reminder to please mute your line when you're not speaking. Just dial star six.
Kimo, looks like you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
It's actually Brad Martin from Interpol working with Kimo. Just one question in relation to safeguards. Has the concept of exploring trying to prevent domain generation algorithms being explored anywhere in this as part of this topic? I know that a lot of the malware will generate domains, and obviously those domains are being registered. It seems to me logical that if something is creating a non-human readable domain, that that's kind of generally going to be for criminal purpose, because the whole concept of a domain is obviously that it is human readable as opposed to an IP address. Just wondering if anybody's looked at that topic.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, but that is not something I've personally encountered in my research as I've been producing this DNS abuse report, but it is something I will certainly look into. So just to be clear, you're sort of are interested in exploring a safeguard as a domain generation algorithm safeguard. Could you provide some more specifics on that?
Yes, it's, again, Brad Martin, M-A-R-D-E-N, from Interpol. And, yeah, and I don't know how you would actually safeguard against it, which is one of the reasons, obviously, it hasn't been brought up before. But, for example, Badet is a type of malware which uses the domains generated via an algorithm, and, you know, it's XYZ127531 dot whatever is how they look. And the only purpose for that is so that the bots can register back to a domain, and it makes it almost impossible for law enforcement to then track those domains because they're being generated on a weekly basis in this case. So it's how would you detect that domains are being registered by an algorithm slash a robot as opposed to being registered by a human for legitimate business purposes?
That's a fascinating point and something we'll look into. We think there may be some teams looking into this now, but we're not quite sure. So definitely something we will look into and get back to this group on. So thanks for that.
So this is Rob. Just to follow on, my apologies, I don't have the screen in front of me now. Yeah, so your DICOM security team is intimately familiar with DGAs, domain generation algorithms. So I know you have expertise there. And by examining that, that gets to a broader issue around looking at if you're going to look at additional safeguards around, you know, preventing DNS abuse. I would refer to actually ESSEC has just made a comment on the market space, new GCLD marketplace health. That was health index or whatever the the comment period was, which were pointed out that there are no measurements of being taken and utilized around rates of malicious registrations, rates of complaints around domain registrations, rates of various other kind of aspects of abuse reports, things like that are associated with a good, kind of a
a healthy domain space in that it's not largely malicious. So one of the things I would suggest, we're going to take a look at additional safeguards, is giving that kind of macro issue around tracking, monitoring, et cetera, within TLDs or within particular registrars, rates of abusive or malicious domains that are being utilized, created, et cetera, because those are places to concentrate effort around, you know, what are the practices, what are the kind of the potentially some sort of structural flaw in the way they're doing things that allows or encourages miscreants to utilize their services, et cetera. You can do that in a couple of places too. You know, if you're looking at more wide scale DNS abuse, you can actually look at DNS providers themselves, as in those who provide authoritative DNS services, not just registrars and registries. So there's ways you can measure that and base that on some of these statistics are being measured around various activities on the internet, and then basically mapping that back to where the supporting infrastructures for that, whether it's the DNS itself, DNS servers themselves or services, or registries and registrars that where they happen to be prevalent. That we've used that as in the security community over time to kind of take kind of private action, but to kind of reach out, outreach, and have helped over the years various either registrars or CCTLD registries in particular get practices and equipment and safeguards in place internally so they are not abused by criminals and the like. Because what you have, especially the new expansion of its TLDs and then expansion of capabilities to do filtering, blocking, et cetera, on the DNS, you've got a real question around reputation. And if you get too bad of a reputation, are your domains going to resolve for large portions of the internet? So while that hasn't been a widespread problem, there's more and more people utilizing those kinds of techniques, especially as the domain name space has gotten much larger lately. So those are some thoughts there. Oh, and just one more thought on the domain generation algorithms in particular. A lot of these DGAs already know what they're going to be. Configer was a great big example that we all probably heard about at some point. So the domains are known what they're going to be. So you can actually track ahead of that and say, okay, well, has anybody registered that domain that's going to be in use tomorrow or next week? And, boy, is that coming from the same person, from the same registrar, you can track these kinds of things and provide some sort of a kind of early warning indicators and potentially preventative measures around, or at least fast reactive measures around dealing with those. Thanks.
Great, Rod. Thank you. And I'm getting pings from my team that we do have some contacts here that we can follow up with that on, so great. Thanks very much to both of you for prompting that. So turn it over to the forum again. To restate the question, do you have any personal or professional experience with these safeguards and any input on their relative degree of effectiveness or ineffectiveness? And also any safeguards you would suggest we consider additionally. Any other comments? Okay, great. Well, I think we might wrap it up there. Jump in with your raised hand if you want to get in before we do close up. We do appreciate your time and input. This is a key part of our research process. But just a few last-minute items to go over. If you do happen to think of something else or weren't able to provide input, you can go to our questionnaire at the address. Here, I'll bring up the slide here. And you can also find the address on the announcement for the session. I know there were some issues in registering to complete the questionnaire, but I believe those have been rectified. But if you do have any issues, you can get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to send one along to you. And we'll need responses by February 3rd at 6 p.m. GMT. Also, if you'd like to receive a notification for when the DNS abuse report is published, you can shoot me an email at brian.acheson@icann.org with the subject line DNS abuse notification. And we'll stay on for just a few more minutes to answer any follow-up questions. But otherwise, thank you again, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Hey Brian, it's Rod. I just wanted to thank you for running the session. Appreciate it. Feel free to follow up with me later on if you like.
Thank you very much, Rod. We appreciate your participation tonight.
Cheers. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Brian, also from Singapore, from Kimo and other guys, and I'll try to access the survey. Last time I had a bit of problems with survey, but maybe I will have a better chance and able to provide some comments.
Great, Kimo, thanks. Yeah, please do. It's great to have your input, and obviously if you have any problems, you have my email, so do get in touch. Thanks.
Thanks for joining, everyone. We're going to go ahead and close the meeting. Just a reminder that the materials, the recording, and other materials will be published at newgtlds.icann.org/reviews.